While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to On the Reader News Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station. Of course, this is the time where we bring you news on the Reader News Analysis from 1300 hours to 1430 every day, Mondays through Friday on the Reader on Eagle FM. Now, this news show broadcasts weekdays from 1300 hours to 1430, and it's a program focused on unpacking the policies, the economic indicators, and the institutional decisions shaping Namibia's development trajectory. Because headlines tell us what happened, but analysis help us understand why it matters. At a time when economic choices carry heightened consequences, and communities across the country are calling for tangible improvements in service delivery, we deliberately pause to examine how legislation translates into implementation and how national budgets convert into real services and how leadership decisions impact everyday life from Windhoek to the coast and the north and the south. Now, unlike traditional news bulletins, On the Reader creates space for structured, balanced and solutions-orientated discussions. We bring together subject matter experts, policymakers, analysts and members of the public to ensure that debate remains grounded in verifiable facts and focus on constructive outcomes. Now, as Namibia enters another day of policy deliberation and economic reflection, we remain committed to clarity over noise, accountability over rhetoric, and substance over speculation. So stay with us right here as debate meets national purpose right on Eagle FM. Now, wherever you're tuning from, whether you are on the road, at home, commuting, or driving, picking up your kids from school, welcome to On the Reader News Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station. And I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju. I'll be keeping you company from now up until 1430. And let's get right into today's news analysis. Zimbabwe's Minister of Energy, July Moyo, opened the forum today in regards to the SADC meeting to discuss about energy transition. Let's take a listen to that, and we'll come in to discuss on what some of the aspects he spoke about. And the forum is expected to host this for the entire week. Let's take a listen to Zimbabwe's Minister of Energy and Development, Power Development, that is July Moyo.
This SADC Sustainable Week is being held at an opportune time. This second edition of the conference has a title, quote, Driving Regional Economic Growth Through Clean Energy and Energy Efficiency. The conference is an initiative which was conceived by our Ministers of Energy and accepted by our SADC Secretariat as an annual event. And it started last year in Botswana. And for those who were in Botswana, it was an exciting starting of a journey that we are going to do and work together. This year, my ministry, together with the SADC Center for Renewable Energy and Energy Efficiency, SACRI, worked with various government ministries in Zimbabwe, departments, parastatals, and sponsors, among others, to host this conference in Zimbabwe. And of course, with the guidance of SADC Secretariat, this is what has taken us to today. And sorry, I did not recognize our Minister of Mines, responsible for renewable energy engineer Makwira Ndzo, who has just joined us. Please welcome. It is going to be a packed week for all of us, filled with many resourceful activities geared towards catalyzing regional economic growth through energy initiatives. The conference shall feature plenary sessions, sponsored sessions, bilateral meetings, field visits, recreational visits, as well as dinners and networking. Take this as part of the conference. There will be few drinks in order to make sure that you open up in your discussions. I would like to urge you to participate in all the activities freely, and I know I will not need to invite you to the cultural dinner, which we will have, because we think gastronomy has become a centerpiece of what we do here in Zimbabwe and is ably sponsored by our First Lady, who has passion for the traditional foods of not just Zimbabwe, of all of us in the region and in the African country as well. And she has been given accolades for hosting gastronomy sessions worldwide. I also assure you that we have provided medical services here during the week to cater for those who would try to exceed their limits as far as gastronomy eating is concerned. So the doctors will be available. Of course, they will also help you in other health-related issues. We will also have the opportunity this week to pass the baton to Eswatini. And that's why His Royal Highness was one of the first ministers to come, because he doesn't want to leave anything to chance. When you know that you are being started by a Royal Highness about what you have done, you have to try to be perfect so that we can pass on the baton to Eswatini, to His Royal Highness Prince Dlamini, who will lead us next year. And he has come with a team led by his secretary, permanent secretary, and we think that those of us from Zimbabwe and SACRI and SADC, we owe it to hand over to Eswatini, having learned what we learned in Botswana last year. We had sessions with the sponsors, with the Austrians, with the Soul Train, and more especially with SADC Secretariat, SACRI, so that we could learn how to organize this. This is the spirit of SADC. This is the spirit that we want to have in the region. I had the privilege of welcoming them yesterday at the Victoria Falls International Airport, the delegation from Botswana, from Eswatini. They came earlier because of what I have just said. And when we thanked the president of Botswana, President Duma Boko, for starting this journey, we were fully aware that they had put an incredible performance last year. And I don't know whether my deputy ministers, the permanent secretary and their team will be able to match. But you will be the judge. Let me also extend a hearty welcome to the SADC team, led by the Acting Director for Infrastructure, as well as the Executive Secretary for SACRI, Mr. Kodakwashe Ntukula, who I have already mentioned. I also recognize the presence of other dignitaries who have already arrived. My job this morning is to welcome you. And it is not my intention to make a speech. I'm just talking about welcoming you. Let me recognize the presence of ministers responsible for energy in various countries, ambassadors, country diplomats, sponsors, academia, the media, and other sectors of the economy. I understand we have sponsors from Europe, and I've mentioned some of them, and across the SADC region. I also want to welcome Zimbabwean sponsors, and they are here in large numbers, for their generosity. Your presence here is testament to the importance of this regional conference. As a region, we are grappling with the issue of renewable energy expansion in terms of our countries. We strongly believe in regional integration and the role that both the public and the private sector play in all of it. You are therefore encouraged to network as much as possible through bilateral meetings, and we have made arrangements so that you can have these bilateral meetings. We will not be having closed-door sessions in most of what we will be doing. We want to open up because even the media has something to offer to us in terms of renewable energy and energy efficiency. So they will be welcome in your sessions. We will promote synergies amongst all attendees this year. We'll also have a ministerial segment where, as a country, and each country will be able to present their energy compact, those who have energy compacts, but for those who don't have energy compacts, they have programs which they are engaged in and who want to learn from each other. This is our blueprint in the energy sector, which will help us achieve the national vision in the case of Zimbabwe in terms of Vision 2030, and is captured in our NDS2, which was launched last year by our president. Our energy compact is both for hydro, big and small, as well as thermal. But more importantly, it introduces the issues of renewable energy and energy efficiency. We also acknowledge the important role played by conventional thermal power plants and traditional hydropower plants within the energy mix. Our actions and plans as a region must recognize these energy sources as well as energy efficiency efforts. Energy efficiency plays an important role in ensuring adequate supply to productive users of energy. Our machinery in industry, in mining, and across the entire economy must be energy efficient if we are going to realize benefit from the available energy resources in our countries. Distinguished guests, I would like to recognize that we have not been collecting enough of statistics. And when I attended the AU on energy efficiency, the gap in terms of our statistics is yearning. And here in SADC, with our Southern African power pool, with our regulators, with the energy ministers, and all of us who meet almost on an annual basis, we have no reason not to have good statistics that speak very eloquently to what we are doing and where we can project to go. Realizing also the importance of regulation, we need to strengthen our regulatory system through synchronizing laws, tariffs, and application of the system. This will strengthen us as SADC and will make us a regional bloc, as we are superintended by the Southern African Power Pool. A strengthened bloc is easily identified as a safe hub for local and international investments opportunities. During this conference, we will network to connect all on all professional levels. On Friday, we will have the chance to visit some of the sustainable energy sites around Victoria Falls, where we will get to see biogas digesters in use in a community and solar thermal technologies at one of our hotels in Victoria Falls. There will be an opportunity to visit the rainforests and enjoy one of the world's natural wonders. And you have been sponsored, some of you. So please don't let us down. You must see this. For those who have been sponsored, for those who have not been sponsored, please sponsor yourselves. Our forests and urban areas here are corridors of wildlife. And for those who tried to move yesterday, the elephants are marauding. I don't know. When you see them like this and they have children, they are running away from lions. So be careful, because the lions will also follow. Some of you will see impala walking around here. They are running away from lions. So let's all be careful at night. During the day, let's be safe. Don't go in the water, because the lions of the rivers are there, the crocodiles. Otherwise, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Zimbabwe, and in particular to Victoria Falls, a symbol of our region's shared natural heritage. We have a collective responsibility to pursue sustainable development. I am confident that the deliberations of the SADC Sustainable Energy Week will contribute meaningfully to strengthening clean energy and energy efficiency as central pillars of our regional economic expansion and economic transformation. I thank you, Siyabonga. Twalumba. Thank you. This SADC Sustainable Week is being held at an opportune time. This second edition of the conference has a title, quote, Driving Regional Economic Growth Through Clean Energy and Energy Efficiency. The conference is an initiative which was conceived by our
ministry. As you heard over there, the 2026 SADC Sustainable Energy Week was officially opened today, the 23rd of February, 2026, in the resort city of Victoria Falls of Zimbabwe. Now, speaking was the Minister of Energy, Zimbabwe's Minister of Energy and Power Development, that is Mr. July Moyo. It rose high-level participation from across Southern Africa under the theme, Driving Regional Economic Growth Through Clean Energy and Energy Efficiency. Now, the event is being hosted by Zimbabwe in collaboration with the Southern African Development Community Secretariat and the SACRI, and it has brought together ministers, energy regulators, policymakers, utilities, private sector investors, development finance institutions, and technical experts, pardon me, from across the 16 SADC member states. And the minister, Mr. July Moyo, also did mention that investments came as far as from Europe. Now, in his remarks, Zimbabwe's Minister of Energy and Power Development, July Moyo, emphasized the urgency of accelerating renewable energy deployment to address persistent power shortages and enhance energy security, as well as support the region's industrialization agenda. Therefore, he called for increased investment in solar, wind, and hydropower projects to strengthen regional power trade through the Southern African Power Pool, and also to scale up energy efficiency initiatives across industry and public infrastructure, as well as expand access to clean cooking solutions in order to reduce reliance on biomass. Now, Minister Moyo noted that reliable and affordable energy remains central to unlocking manufacturing, unlocking mining, and unlocking agricultural and digital transformation across the region. The week will be officially opened on the 25th of February by Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa, underscoring the strategic importance that Zimbabwe places on energy forum and regional cooperation. And the SADC Executive Secretary Elias M. Mangozi is attending the event as well, and is expected to deliver remarks during the high-level sessions that are focused on policy harmonization, on cross-border infrastructure development, and mobilizing climate finance for clean energy projects. Now, today's proceedings, we of of which was the first day of the opening of the ceremony, with the ministerial plenary sessions on regional energy policy alignment, renewable energy innovation showcases, dialogues on energy access and clean cooking, wind energy development and discussions, business-to-business, also known as B2B networking sessions that are connecting project developers and financiers. Now, technical sessions also explored the role of green hydrogen, battery storage systems, grid modernization, and digital technologies in accelerating the region's energy transition. SADC countries continue to face electricity supply constraints driven by aging infrastructure, by climate-induced droughts affecting hydropower generation and rising demand that is linked to economic growth and urbanization. Now, at the same time, Southern Africa poses vast renewable energy potential, including some of the world's highest solar irradiation levels and significant wind corridors. Therefore, the SADC Sustainable Energy Week serves as the region's premier annual platform to strengthen regional energy integration, promote investment-ready energy, clean energy projects, enhance public-private partnerships, and support implementation of the SADC's Regional Infrastructure Development Master Plan. Now, the event is expected to catalyze new partnerships and financing commitments that are aimed at accelerating the transition towards clean, affordable, and sustainable energy systems across Southern Africa. Now, as deliberations continue throughout the week, stakeholders are expected to outline actionable pathways for boosting regional power trade, improving energy efficiency standards, as well as closing the energy access gap, with key pillars for advancing inclusive economic growth in the SADC region. With that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. You're also welcome to share your opinions or contributions or ask questions on 083-288-401. I'll see you after the commercial break. Stay tuned right here on the Real News Analysis.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngelo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwepu tete opoewe ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kongerewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Now, in other news, with uranium emerging as Namibia's top export commodity in 2025, debate is intensifying over the country's long-term economic strategy. Now, should Namibia invest in nuclear energy production or consider acquiring a stake in global diamond giant De Beers? Well, the Village newspaper spoke to mining and economic experts to unpack the sustainability of uranium, the future of diamonds in Namibia's broader development path. Now, to help me unpack this conversation better, I'm joined in studio by my colleague, David Chambe. David Chambe, welcome to On The Radar News Analysis. It's a pleasure to have you.
Good afternoon, Juju. Thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be here. How are things going?
Things are going quite well, Chambe. Now, of course, this is quite an interesting topic, I must say, David Chambe.
Yeah, indeed.
Now, let's first get your opinion, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Often we debate on other people's opinions,
yeah,
and not necessarily about ourselves, the authors. So let's get your opinion, Chambe. What do you think? Should Namibia invest in nuclear energy production or consider acquiring a stake in the global diamond, De Beers?
Yeah, actually, thank you once again. It's actually not my question, because it's a question that you have posed. I'm just going to reflect on what the expert have stated.
Okay.
Yeah, but, looking at, on top of the page of the Village newspaper, you'll be able to realize that, two things. We have, uranium, number one in Africa, number three in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we are a giant. We are even better than the US, the Russians, the Chinese, and all these things.
Yeah.
And there is always a case to say, what is Namibia's future of energy sustainability? Looking, for example, last year in November, and it has been the case, it's not a surprise, looking at that statistic, which is indicating that it's only 40.1% of energy that Namibia uses is generated at home. And the other 59 and others are coming from outside the country, mostly in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have something that you can invest into, then it can take 15 years. We speak about long term.
Yes.
15 years to 20 years. But when you are done investing in that, you are self-sustaining, is finito. And the beauty of it is that it can supply in the country and outside. Now, the experts have two things in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Some are indicating to say, and actually they all agree to say, a nuclear plant is not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is how you handle it. Where are you getting the money? And are you able to sustain it?
And where are you going to put the waste?
Where are you going to put the waste? Those are just the question. And the other one stated that, especially when I spoke to Mr. Andrew Inchitere, stated that no, energy, a nuclear plant is actually not a problem. It's a very good thing.
Mm-hmm.
However, we have a lot of projects that we have already opened. Why can't we finish the project that we have? Mm-hmm. Because Juju, you cannot, and I understand him. You cannot say you are a successful farmer. Today you are farming with chicken. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow we have sheep here. Next time you are importing camels from the desert. You want to try everything.
Mm-hmm.
Why these things are not sustainable? I understand him very well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting, and also to see. And the question is that, are we starting? And the question is that also, what are the options that that we have also on the table? It's interesting that the discussion has started.
Mm-hmm.
But personally, Juju, I think it's quite interesting to say that experts also start to realize that you cannot have something that is rare in the world, or something that you are produced, but you are not utilizing
it
for the future.
Because, and you have it in abundance compared to other countries who are utilizing
and
it.
And you are in need.
Exactly.
Do you know how much we are paying to Eskom?
No.
This guy started making profit now because they make sure that, you know what was happening in South Africa the past 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
We have always seen this thing on it's YouTube, it's on Facebook and TikTok. Load shedding. People are celebrating.
Mm.
You know, a minister is speaking, electricity just say cup out. But that thing, those guys did not stop supplying to us. They made sure that they are in dark, but they are supplying to us because you know why?
We are paying.
We are paying. So, it's interesting to see. But, and the other thing which was stated is also in-depth research and also consistency. Because there is always something which I'm always discussing to say, why can't we have visionary people.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope our president It's also looking at long term when he's looking at the economy, because if you have a visionary person like the founding president to say, I want to see something in the next 30 years.
Yeah.
Even if you know that when you are there, if we invest in nuclear, maybe if it's not going to benefit me, or why it's not going to benefit your children or our children?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, of course, I think this discussion comes in at a very pivotal time, because considering SADC just opened the 2026 SADC Sustainable Week today, that is in Victoria Falls, Zimbabwe. And the theme of it is driving regional economic growth through clean energy. And I want to really highlight clean energy and energy efficiency.
Yeah.
You know, having spoken to guests here in terms of solar, right? We're going solar. There's one thing I've noticed. And hearing from them, you hear that we are strategically positioned, placed, you know, geographically, where the sun rays access to it so very well. The sun shines very well in our country here. But then I think we're not exploring, or we're not really investing in that aspect of solar energy. That could be a way too. Imagine, Shombe, if we can really invest in that as well. Your whole house electrically powered by solar energy.
Yeah.
You know,
there is nothing good that was never spoken about us. If we just giving an example, if Namibia was a person, is that the most beautiful and attractive lady in the world?
Yeah.
And well positioned.
Mm-mm.
The height is on point and all the things. But the question is that what is happening internal, that individual? And what are we doing about the resources that that we have? We have now green hydrogen, we have solar, we have nuclear, we have water. There's actually nothing that we have. Maybe the problem, and which I'm observing from my view, is that it's an aspect of long term. Why should I not plant a tree that I know I'm not going to enjoy that shelter? Because if you look at 30 years may look like, you know,
very far.
It's far. But Juju, we were just playing at primary school, now we are here. You understand?
Yeah.
People are now calling you uncles. But you don't know what will happen after, because when you look at timing, it looks like there is more time. But when you start something, I think that it's going to save us from a lot of problems, because Juju, we have a lot of problems apart from that. But if you sort out energy, and I think majority of the people will be able to agree that it's energy that we need. Because Juju, if you have electricity, that is cheap. Everything will just go on point. Because if you power yourself, there is no business operate without electricity.
In the industry.
In the industry too. How can you operate a factory in the dark?
No.
Yes, you can power the factory with solar, but you also need something which is
on
strong.
The grid.
On the grid. Definitely.
Interesting. You know, but I'm busy wondering, Shombe, is it that perhaps we lack the ideas, or that we lack the right people with the right ideas to in those offices, or maybe people sitting on implementation level, policy implementations are not the ones who have the ideas on the outside. I don't know.
You know, I was watching one interview,
it's
a South African it's an interview of one of the premiers in South Africa with Ndrozi. And they call him Panyazare Sufi. That guy is a premier. And one thing that he was indicating is to say, you know, this thing of politics, you can be experts, but if your function is not in power, we bring in Juju. You become a counselor, or you become somebody who is influential, not really because you are able, but because your function won. But you know where the problem is? The problem is here that talent does not hide. Whether you like me or you
not.
Don't like me, if Juju, you are good, you are the best presenter. If you are the best presenter in Eagle 11, why should I not use you?
Exactly.
For example, and it does not matter. And that is what's putting us down to say, David is not at this function, or this engineer is, just for example, this engineer is PDM. Mm-hmm. But he's the only best engineer that we have. But I think he's.
I don't want to use him because.
But no. We come. We strategically deploy Comrade Juju here because. It's, but even if you are not able, that's why we are too few to fight each other, even in things that can assist us. I think people we have them, it's just a matter of well positioning them so that we can
benefit.
We can benefit in a good direction, and maybe just on top of that. Their proposal on the BS, and I'm very happy that our government is on standstill, especially when it comes to buying shares in the BS, because Botswana was pushing to have 50%, Angola wanted to have 80% in the BS. Mm-hmm. And when I talk to analysts, they are saying that is a dead horse. Mm-hmm. Juju, if you are going to a competition and your horse is, you can already look at the eyes of the horse that this one is thirsty. This one has been running for all those years.
Mm-hmm.
The BS has been at the center of diamond industry. Yes. But you know that now diamond is not...
It's not booming.
You know, it's going down. It's
declining.
Because people are using lab-made diamonds.
Mm-hmm. And I think your statistics say it could go to 75% from what I read in the article.
Indeed, the 75% index is going to 75% index. And when you look at that graph, you'll be shocked to say, is it ever going to come back? Because you know what? Mm-hmm. I used to think... lab-made diamond were fake, but I realized that they are industrial diamonds. To say people now prefer lab-made diamonds than natural diamonds.
I think we need to get in a study why people prefer lab-grown diamonds over
natural
ones. They're cheaper, obviously.
No, they are easy to cut. They are more shiny, and you know, if something is made by it's man-made, you can do it with your own features.
You take the original and better.
Advance it because with nature, you know, in the one analyst, especially when it comes to diamond, indicated to say, you know, the old guys, the guys with money, they preferred, you know, I'm buying my wife this shiny natural diamond ring, you know, natural diamond necklace. Mm. But they say, no, you know, the new guys, they prefer, they prefer lab-made diamonds. And countries that are... Because if you have a lot of things now, the market is changing. It's not rare anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I'm wondering to say the guys who stole from Namdi, where are they going to sell? Where are they going to sell? Because if you keep them for the next... them for the next 10 years, then you are finished. I don't know. Maybe it's going to come, but I don't know what will happen in the future. Because the beer is a dead horse. Mm. We need to make sure that we are not losing money anymore. There's no time to guess. To say, let me invest in chicken. Mm. I'm also investing in goat.
Yeah.
But I heard that camels, they don't consume much water. I maybe invest in them. Just be successful in that thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But I think we could probably now at this point go that way, Shombe, in a nuclear plane. I mean, we have nothing to lose. We have the uranium.
Yeah.
We have nothing to lose, actually. Yes. We're talking about the waste. We're talking about the investment that you're putting in. How are you going to get it out?
Mm.
But Eskom also started somewhere. They had to take a risk.
Yeah.
And I love how, the independent mining, mining who?
Mining operators.
Mining operator, Nashilongo, is it who?
Yeah.
How she said we can't be Eskom clients forever. So.
Yeah, because, you know, and I'm always asking this question to say, why do we are still in the tendency of pleasing people? Juju, just ask yourself a question. If Namibia is developed like Singapore, for example, who is going to be offended? Because remember that somebody is capitalizing on our lack of creativity.
Mm.
On our blindness.
Yes.
Somebody is capitalizing on that. No, these guys can just continue giving us. But if we become so clever, then we say, okay, thank you. Now we are building. Mm-hmm. We are still supplying you, mm-hmm. but the time will come that we're going to stand.
Mm-hmm.
Development will disrupt and some people will be offended.
True, Shombe.
Yeah.
Let me give a very simple scenario, right?
Yeah.
That is somewhat village understandable.
Yes.
So now this is our household, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at the neighbors, they constructed or they got all the infrastructure needed to put a tap in their house.
Mm-hmm.
And now every month we are paying $100 to them to go and fetch water from the neighbor's house.
Mm.
Instead of just actually sitting down and saying, you know what, let's tighten our belts and invest about, I don't know, so much money into having our own, getting our own tap within our, that, you know, remember when the villages that time,
the
neighbors, they now have water, they don't have to go fetch it so far.
Yeah.
And you guys don't have water, you still have to go walk distances.
Yeah.
And then households decided, they actually started realizing that, you know what, let all, everybody in the house contribute money.
So we cannot save our own.
Yes.
No,
it's the same.
No, it's the same with, you know, you can simplify it to even renting. And I'm very sorry to the landlords, because if you get so much money and you buy your own house, do you think the landlord is going to be happy with you? But you have been trying to, we have been helping each other, but there will be a time when we are saying, guys, thank you.
Yes.
And, we are going to do this. And I hope really, not only for the sake of history, and I hope this administration will start something, even drafting a program so that others will be able also to build on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're right.
Mm.
Who do you think we need to pull up actually to get the ball rolling? Or who needs to actually get up and get this?
But my understanding is start small. Yeah, you start small. You start with, you're starting a school project.
Yeah.
Then you have a national project.
Yes.
Then you have, you know, a continental thing, because you cannot aim to sell the whole of SADC region if you cannot supply yourself. Because that 50%, almost 60, is a lot. If we can just fill that gap, then other money that we are supposed to use in that, then we can invest in other things. But if you are just here, then it's going to be very difficult moving into the future. But it's just, I think, strategic investment, which is long term. Let's think about 25 years.
Mm-hmm. But I must be honest, Shombe.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we like to blame the new leadership that is coming.
Yeah, yeah.
Or just recently maybe went out, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think long time ago, these are conversations that should have been on the table.
Yeah.
So we look back and we say, they should have done that. It's just like when your parents have grown up in the capital city.
Yeah.
They had money to afford a house, but they refused to do it. And now you are forced to rent. And you're
asking
yourself,
indeed,
Mom,
yeah.
why didn't you buy a house?
No, it's a good thing. And the question you come to that is the question is now, is there now what need to be done?
Mm.
Because if you listen to BS, I always say, why do we guys speaking about we need to, we have to, or we must? And the question is, who is doing it?
Or who should do it?
Even the Minister of Energy is saying, no, guys, we must invest in alternative energy. Or you find the Minister
Boss,
of
Health. We are looking to you.
You know, I'm just for example, when the Minister of Health says, no, we must provide medication to our people. Now, you are driving.
Uh-huh.
You can't say, no, we must go to Ogahanja. Just say, this gear is gear one. Is facing that direction of Okahanja.
Yes.
And this is gear two, is facing that direction of Okahanja. Don't just say the aspect of we need to, we'll still continue enjoying conferences and relaxing,
excellent,
discussing about problems.
That is so true.
Yeah.
Shombe, thank you so much for making time for us right here.
All right, Juju, thank you.
Okay. And of course, that was my colleague David Shombe, just helping me to debunk this conversation. But of course, this is on the Reader News Analysis. Please do come through. Air opinions or contributions, 0832888401 is the number in studio. Let's pause here now. Take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile
Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshuana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna emi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Okwene ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile ko berewa bora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And now time for economic indicators and thereafter news beyond the borders of Namibia. Now, $1 today is equal to 16 Namibian dollars, 0.03 cents. And 1 Swiss franc is equal to 20 Namibian dollars, 0.65 cents. 1 Australian dollar is equal to 11 Namibian dollars, 0.34 cents. 1 euro is equal to 18 Namibian dollars, 0.96 cents. And 1 United Arab Emirates dirham is equal to 4 Namibian dollars and 36 cents. 1 Botswana pula is equal to 1 Namibian dollar and 22 cents. Now let's move over to news beyond the borders of Namibia. Let's start off in South Africa, where Minister Skell Labour and SIU brief media on Home Affairs corruption probe that is in South Africa. Take a listen.
In the interim, there's yet another developing story unfolding at the SAWA. The Home Affairs Minister in Dr. Leon Schreiber, as well as the acting head of the SIU in Leonard Lekgotho, and other officials are currently presenting the interim report of the SIU's investigations into Home Affairs. And this is in relation to the issuing of permanent residence permits and visas. That briefing is well underway with the acting head of the SIU speaking. Let's listen.
Is that one of Mr. Mpofu? I think also his case was well mentioned in the media, where SIU investigated Mr. Mpofu following a whistleblower allegation in 2023. Evidence confirmed that Mr. Mpofu obtained a fraudulent permanent residence permit in 2018 through an agent paying $3,000. The document was riddled with irregularity, incorrect font, misspelled stamp, and reference number that did not exist in the Department of Home Affairs record. Despite the fraudulent PRP, Mpofu used it to secure a high-paying position in the Northwest Development Corporation. He was employed as an asset manager, earning close to $900,000 per annum, and later promoted to acting CFO, then to CFO, earning $1.6 million per annum. He also used fraudulent visa and exemption certificate to extend his stay and employment, despite being ineligible under the Immigration Act. Mpofu fraudulent documentation enabled him to obtain vehicle finances for a Land Rover Sports and a Ford Ranger and a BMW 3 Series. He also manipulated traffic registration number to secure licenses. As you know, there's what we call traffic registration number. This number is issued to foreigners who come to the country if they want to buy vehicle, because you require an ID number. So he used that in order to buy vehicles. The SIU refer Mpofu matters to the National Prosecuting Authority, resulting in conviction at the Mabato Regional Court. He was sentenced to 3 years imprisonment under correctional supervision. With an additional suspension.
Oma wa o tomono okuja ko NHP. Genge wa longi fae longi foli li pedulo wa wo haku. Olo halipiti kwa efiku nefiku. Mefiloshi shelo haku oe. Owa washi mali wa oshosha kupako. Washika we delwa komto alando lako. Kashi koma punglo e na shano unjola wele oe. Otodulo okulongi fa oma wa oe. Wa hupuko opo una miti toshiningi momikalo dihapungashi. Okufuti lapo oi mali wa ishona. Oyo hodulo okupolwa. Ulifutila ove mwene, oma yakulo olu hapu, hakala ina kwa telwa, mowa we kwa folo elu unamiti, ile oto julu no kuli, okupitifapo e mwe didonumba, tokala ino futa e akulo lo elu unamiti. Kwa uyalele uhapu, talela po nhp.com.na. Ema ngono malandola fano ododi na okulandulwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your life, your peace of mind, NHP, we're about you.
Ended sentence for fraud. We are talking as the team, looking at the sentence that has been muted out. So we are looking at whether we should not convince NPA to really appeal the sentence, because based on what has happened, we don't feel that the suspended sentence will be appropriate. Still under Mpofu, his modus operandi include exploiting deficiencies in the department systems, using agents to shift responsibility, and abusing litigation to delay accountability, and taking advantage of weak interdepartmental verification process. Another example also that we want to highlight is a McLaren investigation, which is a Nigerian national and unexplained re-entry into the country. The SIU also investigated a Nigerian national link to a high-profile McLaren crash in Cape Town. One individual, Mr. Prince Obioma, overstays his visitor's visa in 2023, remain illegally in South Africa until his departure, and later re-enter the country without a record. Despite his unlawful status, he was identified in the McLaren accident in March 2025. His unexplained re-entry highlights serious failure in border management and movement control system. Investigation into the identity fraud and DNA manipulation. That's an example also that we also want to highlight. Based on the finding of the SIU investigation in conjunction with the Interpol, a significant scheme of identity fraud has been uncovered, primarily involving foreign nationals who obtain South African passport to commit crime abroad or seek refugee status elsewhere. The investigation revealed a specific modus operandi in which this individual collude with the departmental official to gain unauthorized access to Department of Home Affairs offices. Once inside, they fraudulently use the fingerprints of an unsuspecting South African citizen while substituting the photograph on the application with that of a foreign national. In response to this finding, the SIU has proposed systemic recommendation to bolster security, and we advise that while the department is implementing its biometric system, it should enforce stricter control on passport photographs. Furthermore, the SIU recommended that strengthening physical access control to the departmental office is very important in order to ensure that all individuals entering the Department of Home Affairs facility can be positively identified, thereby preventing such internal collusion. In a parallel investigation, the SIU also uncovered evidence of DNA sample swapping and manipulation, which is a scheme designed to favor foreign national in their application for permanent residence permit. This practice exploits the requirements for DNA testing conducted by National Health Laboratory Services, which is a prerequisite for certain visa categories. The SIU has found prima facie evidence that these biological results are being tampered with to benefit foreign applicants. Although this specific manipulation may not fall strictly under Department of Home Affairs direct operational control, the SIU has formally alerted the department to this observation to ensure interagency awareness and cooperation. Compounding this issue of fraud is the systemic abuse of the retirement visa categories.
The acting head of SIU and the Minister of Home Affairs are presenting an interim report on the SIU's interim report into the Home Affairs investigation into the issuing of permanent residence permits and visas, as you heard over there. Now let's move over to other news. Gauteng SOPA is talking about employment potential of recycling.
Gauteng Premier Panyaza Lesufi is set to deliver the 2026 State of the Province address on Monday at the Nasrec Expo Center. In last year's address, the Premier of South Africa's Economic Hub had identified unemployment as one of Gauteng's G13 priority challenges. And amongst the sections highlighted for its employment potential is recycling, which of course Gauteng accounted with, of course Gauteng in fact accounting for 52% of the country's recycling operations and processing nearly 58% of South Africa's total recyclate tonnage. And earlier today, SABC News reporter Tadule Zaba visited a recycling station in Newtown in Johannesburg and filed the following report for us.
Well, greetings. As you can see, we are within the inner city of Johannesburg at a waste recycling sector where they supply bigger companies, private waste companies, with recycling materials, your metals, plastic, cans and boxes. I have a gentleman who's in this business for more than 20 to 15 years, who's going to shed more light about this sector as we build up to the opening of the Gauteng legislature. Sir, a very good afternoon to you. Thank you so much for your time.
We do this business more than for 15 years. So we bought these things from the street people to sell for bigger company, waste pivot. So we do this business to promote the Johannesburg to be clean.
Now, let's talk about the business side of things. How much money are you making in this sector?
We make money for small things, not too much. Maybe per month, maybe 2,000 or 2.5, like that. It's not too much. Just to promote to clean the Johannesburg.
Now that the Premier of the province will be addressing the province, what perhaps assistance do you want government to be involved in terms of formalizing the sector?
You can to promote us to give like some money to promote the business, because we do these things, we get this money for small like this because we don't have more capital. Thanks.
And then how much do you pay your cyclers who bring in the materials here?
We can't say we pay more money because sometimes it depends on the business, how it's construction. Sometimes it's good, price is up, sometimes it's down. It's like a business moving like that.
Well, thank you. That is one of the individuals we understand. He's a manager right here who ensures that every day, day to day, there are operations ensuring that those private waste companies have the materials to recycle your cans, your bottles, you name it, in order to keep the business running.
Let's move over to Zambia, as 5,000 farmers have been trained in sustainable intensification practices. 5,000 is a huge number. Let's take a listen.
Government, in collaboration with stakeholders, has reached out to 55,000 smallholder farmers with diverse sustainable intensification practices, which farmers can utilize to increase crop yields. National Coordinator for the Sustainable Intensification of Smallholder Farming Systems, CIFAS Project, Dr. Geoffrey Sulemba, says the farmers have been reached out with various agricultural technologies from inception of the project in 2019. Dr. Sulemba named the sustainable intensification practices as conservation agriculture, crop diversification and intercropping, agroforestry and soil fertility, among others.
The target is 60,000 farmers in the five provinces where we're operating. And as things stand now, we are almost at the end of the project. We are somewhere around 55,000 farmers that we have reached with the technologies that we have seen here, which are the sustainable agriculture intensification practices.
Dr. Christian Tiefelder is International Maize and Wheat Improvement Center cropping system agronomist.
Farmers will get very good yields from those plots in the range of 3 to 7, 8 tons in some cases, so per hectare. And that is actually what we wanted to achieve. Farmers producing enough from their piece of land and become food secure.
CIMIT agricultural economist Dr. Hambulong Goma had this to say.
At the policy level, the government now has this 10.1.1 targets under the CATSIP. How can they increase maize production by almost threefold? I think sustainable intensification provides a pathway to that.
Southern Province Agriculture Coordinator Alfred Sanderson also weighed in on the matter.
The soils will be sustained for a long time because of using technologies like ripping as well as intensifying in terms of crop production.
Reporting, Lawrence Kabutu in Mazabuka, Southern Province.
Meanwhile, more than six, before we actually get to that, Africa's mineral rush turns deadly as mining accidents are on the rise.
The deadly incident took place in the Kampani community in Plateau State. Nigerian officials said the area was an abandoned lead and zinc mine with stored minerals prone to releasing toxic gases. Police cordoned off the site to prevent further access. Survivors were taken to hospital.
The incident happened at a mining site, which was reported to my station. Immediately I rushed there, saw the victims and rushed them to the hospital. We recovered about 26 dead bodies.
It is believed that carbon monoxide had spread in the poorly ventilated tunnels, causing miners to suffocate and collapse after inhaling it. The Nigeria Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative cited that the country loses up to $9 billion annually to illegal mining and gold smuggling. With rising poverty levels, illegal mining is on the rise in Nigeria, a factor locals attest to.
I am a resident at Kampani Zurak, where our loved ones had the incident at the mining site. We have no other means of livelihood apart from mining. We see this work as our destiny. We do not believe anyone intended to harm our loved ones. It was an act of God. He gave them to us. He has taken them back. Whatever God sends, we accept. I lost my son and my young brother.
I went to the mine in search of daily bread. When we entered, something happened and our breathing stopped. We fainted. We did not know when we were taken to the hospital. When the gas strikes inside the mine, it throws you to the ground and you can die. About 37 people I knew died. Later, I was told the number had risen to 47. I also heard that some foreign experts came with breathing equipment to assist people, and because of that, some lives were saved.
The federal government has suspended all mining activities in areas near the accident site to allow for comprehensive investigation. Joy Kiruki Juma, CGTN.
Medical negligence claims spark countrywide debate over hospital safety in Nigeria.
For this mother of twins, a medical procedure changed her life. Married in 2014, Alice Chidiberi was looking forward to giving birth to her first child a year later. However, 6 months into the pregnancy, she lost the baby and was scheduled for an evacuation procedure. She says what followed left her unable to carry a pregnancy again, forcing her family to turn to costly surrogacy after years of tests and failed treatments.
I'll blame the hospital because I still remember when I went for that evacuation. The doctor who did the evacuation, I overheard the student doctor with him. So let me try. Let me. You said the next time you give me to try. So he gave her what he was using to do the evacuation. She did. So I think at that point, that was when the damage happened. It disrupted a lot of things in my system. In fact, I couldn't conceive. That was what medical report said, that I can't conceive. So it did a lot of damage, even to my mental health and every other thing around me.
The physical, emotional, and financial impact on Alice and her family has been severe. Her experience reflects a wider pattern. Families who say they walked into hospitals seeking care but came out with lasting harm. Patient safety advocates say many of these incidents are preventable and often linked to weak supervision, fatigue, and poor process control inside medical facilities. Clinical governance expert Obinna Anyanwu explains why breakdowns happen behind the scenes.
There should be a protocol that everyone understands and everybody uses routinely, so it's like an automatic thing. The second thing is also fatigue. That's a human factor. You have a surgeon do surgeries, 10 surgeries, 15 surgeries in a day. At a point, the team might be fatigued and that could happen. The third thing that people don't also monitor their processes. I believe that after every operation, people should sit down, team should sit down, go through what they have done. What did we do right? What didn't we do well? What were the near misses? So when you document this and review it, it makes you to create systems that will avoid the big things from happening.
But when things go wrong, getting justice can be another uphill battle. Legal experts say many families are discouraged by long court delays, high legal costs, and the burden of proof required in negligence claims. Medical law expert Nekabari Anna says mistakes alone do not amount to negligence, and proving wrongdoing requires strong evidence.
An act amounts to negligence where the medical practitioner clearly disregards the standard way of doing that particular thing. It is not enough for you to say the doctor has injured you. It's not enough for you to say the doctor has breached the duty of care. You must prove and establish specifically by evidence how this duty of care was breached and how it resulted in injury to you.
Anna says many disputes end in out-of-court settlements. He adds that disciplinary processes exist, including tribunals under the Medical and Dental Council of Nigeria, but funding and speed remain concerns. Pressure is now growing for faster trials, stronger enforcement, and compensation that truly reflects the scale of harm suffered by victims. From shattered dreams to the long search for accountability, many families say Nigeria's health system is at a crossroad. The federal government's new National Task Force on Clinical Governance and Patient Safety is seen as a step forward. But experts say without stricter oversight, better funding, and a culture of transparency, families will continue to pay the ultimate price. Kelechi Emekalam, CGTN Abuja, Nigeria.
Meanwhile, more than 600 are arrested in cybercrime crackdown across Africa.
It is one of the largest cross-border operations involving law enforcement agencies from multiple countries. The operation, targeting 16 African countries, saw local authorities arrest 651 suspects and recover $4.3 million between December last year and January this year. Backed by Interpol, Operation Red Card 2.0 targeted the infrastructure and people behind high-yield investment scams, mobile money fraud, and fraudulent mobile loan applications. The two-month-long operation exposed scams linked to over $45 million in financial losses and identified 1,247 victims from across the world, but mostly from Africa. Over 1,000 fraudulent social media accounts were taken down in Nigeria, including an operational hub. In Kenya, 27 suspects linked to online fraud were arrested, while in Cote d'Ivoire, police arrested 58 suspects and seized 240 mobile phones, 25 laptops, and over 300 SIM cards. In recent years, there's been a surge in online scams in Africa. A report by Interpol in 2025 said cybercrime accounted for 30% of all reported crime in Western and Eastern Africa. Robert Nagela, CGTN.
Violence has erupted in Mexico after a drug lord, El Mencho, was killed. Let's take a listen.
Violence has broken out in several cities across Mexico, hours after the army confirmed it had killed one of the country's most feared drug lords. Nemesio Oseguera Cervantes, better known as El Mencho, was the leader of the Jalisco New Generation cartel. He was shot in a dawn raid and died from his injuries. Mexico said the operation was carried out with U.S. intelligence. Will Grant reports.
Nemesio Oseguera, known as El Mencho, was quite simply the most wanted drug lord in Mexico. Responsible for trafficking huge quantities of cocaine, methamphetamine and fentanyl into the United States, he'd evaded the authorities for years, until now. So far, the Mexican military has not released images, but El Mencho was injured during a raid in Jalisco State and then died while being taken to Mexico City. The Mexican embassy in the U.S. said it was carried out with U.S. intelligence. The reaction from his cartel has been immediate and violent. Unverified pictures, thought to be filmed in Puerto Vallarta on the Jalisco coast, show plumes of smoke rising over the tourist hotspot. And there's destruction across Mexico, including in Guadalajara, one of the host cities of this summer's FIFA World Cup. The U.S. has warned its citizens to shelter in place as the violence unfolds. The killing of El Mencho represents a clear victory for President Claudia Sheinbaum and for President Trump, who's long demanded more progress on tackling Mexican cartels. But with some Mexican cities in flames, it's not yet clear at what cost. Will Grant, BBC News, Mexico.
Jordi Labraya is an independent journalist based in Mexico. He gave us this update.
Well, it's been nearly 12 hours since the news spread out that El Mencho, the most wanted criminal, not only in Mexico or the United States, but in globally in the world, was killed, was held by the authorities. And then when he was transported to Mexico City in a plane to a hospital, he passed away. So the reactions were immediately violent across all over Mexico. In 9 of the states in Mexico suspended school classes for tomorrow, and in at least 15 states have been road blockage and violent reactions from cartel members. So it's really messy in Mexico now, and the government hasn't spoke openly about it, just briefly. And we're in a state of, fear and waiting for more actions to be held by cartel members. We know that we're going to face violent actions. We're facing a war in Sinaloa because of the transportation of, in a matter of speaking, of El Mayo to the United States. So that it was a huge leader also, but this specific killing from in the hands of Mexican authorities, we're expecting that we're going to have more violence, and the Mexican government obviously is calling to peace and calling to calm, but there is no calm. There are many businesses being burned, many roads being closed by criminals and trailers, particular cars being held by criminals and then burned. So we're in a war zone, specifically.
Meanwhile, in other international news, an armed man was killed after entering a secure perimeter of President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence. Let's take a listen.
A man has been shot and killed after trying to enter the secure perimeter of President Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence. Secret Service have been updating the media on what we know so far, and they showed this image. Now, it's hard to see, but what you can make out there is a shotgun, they said. And a man in his 20s, a white man in his 20s, tried to enter Mar-a-Lago. He was carrying a shotgun and a gas canister. Well, the Palm Beach County Sheriff said that they ordered the man to drop both the shotgun and the canister, but he dropped the can and raised the shotgun to a firing position. Let's have a listen.
At 1:30 this morning, the security detail detected that a individual had made his way into the inner perimeter of Mar-a-Lago. A deputy and two Secret Service agents on the detail went to that area to investigate. They confronted a white male that was carrying a gas can and a shotgun. He was ordered to drop those two pieces of equipment that he had with him, at which time he put down the gas can, raised the shotgun to a shooting position. At that point in time, the deputy and the two Secret Service agents fired their weapons and neutralized the threat. He is deceased at the scene. I'll give you a picture of the shotgun and the gas can to have with you. So that's what we know now. Investigation continues. The FBI is the lead investigation agency on this case, and we will be assisting them in whatever manner they would like. And they will be responsible for answering any other questions at an appropriate time.
That's Palm Beach County Sheriff Rick Bradshaw there updating the media on what they can share about that ongoing investigation. Well, let's go live to Washington, D.C. and speak to our correspondent there, Simi Jolla Osho. So, Simi, just tell us what more we've heard from the FBI about what's unfolded.
Well, what we know so far is what we heard from Sheriff Bradshaw during that press conference. We know this man was a white man in his 20s. We know he unlawfully entered the secure perimeter at President Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida. It happened around 1:30 local time, which is around 6:30 GMT. We know he had a shotgun and a fuel can. We know agents confronted the man and fired shots. They haven't released any details identifying the man. We know that no officers were injured. We know the president wasn't in Florida at the time. Usually he's there over the weekend, but this time around he's still in Washington. And this has been shocking, but this isn't the first targeted assassination attempt on the president. Not long ago, a man called Ryan Ruth, who was 59, he was sentenced to life in prison for an attempted assassination on the president, also at a Florida golf course. But Secret Service agents caught him on time. They saw him lurking in the bushes. That happened around 2 months after another assassination attempt on the president by Matthew Crooks. You might remember when he fired a few shots at the president at a rally, one of those shots grazing the president's ear, and that turned to be a turning point in the president's presidential campaign. But we don't have more details so far. We just know that the man was shot and killed by agents, and what we can expect is that security at the president's Mar-a-Lago resort will probably be increased after this attempt. We're not sure if the president will be going to Mar-a-Lago this weekend or remaining in Washington. So we're just going to wait and hear if we hear more details and a response from the president and his administration to this attempt.
Okay, Simi Jolla Osho, thank you very much for telling us what we know so far on that developing story. Well, let's go now to Daniel Lipman. The Politico newspaper's website, I should say now, White House reporter Daniel, you've been to Mar-a-Lago on a number of occasions, I'm sure. I've been down there before as well. It's pretty fortified and it's by a busy road. So it does raise questions about how someone could have got close to the perimeter in the first place.
Yeah, especially when President Trump is not there, they decrease the security considerably. And so what we heard from that news conference is that the man who was shot, he entered as an exiting vehicle was leaving the property. And so they're going to really have to take a full 360-degree view of how to make sure this doesn't happen again, especially when there are protectees at Mar-a-Lago.
Indeed. Was there anything you wanted to reflect on what we've heard so far from the police? I mean, of course, Daniel, it is an active police investigation. We don't know much more about the suspect's identity. But, of course, as soon as the alarm was raised, local police also were at the scene as well.
Yeah, so his family apparently reported him missing a few days ago. He's from North Carolina. But we don't know any motive. We don't know if he was a critic of Trump. Was he just someone who is mentally ill and looking for a kind of a target of opportunity? But it does come as political violence has increased in the U.S. A fair amount in recent years. We saw, starting what happened with Steve Scalise, who is a top House Republican who was grievously shot at that baseball field more than a decade ago. We saw Nancy Pelosi's husband, Paul Pelosi, was attacked at their San Francisco mansion. We saw those two Trump assassination attempts. We saw those Minnesota Democratic politicians who were killed. And so it does seem like the country is in the throes of almost like 1960s again in terms of political assassinations.
Yeah, indeed, Daniel. I remember covering the Steve Scalise assassination attempt and, you know, questions were asked about, you know, the security even on something like that because it was a baseball game. But this is a residence where the President of the United States often visits at weekends. So, I mean, the questions around this, especially given that the President survived two assassination attempts in the last couple of years, will be really serious ones on the Secret Service again, for example.
Yeah, they have been very stretched thin by the amount of threats that they have to deal with, the number of Trump family members that they are protecting. And so it's sometimes hard to recruit for such a difficult job, and especially one that's become even more dangerous in some respects. And so I'm sure there's going to be congressional hearings about this. Thank goodness Donald Trump was not there, but it also raises the question of who wants to even enter American political office these days when you get, it's not just negative TV ads anymore, it's people.
And with that, let's pause right here and take a trip to the Maka place. Of course, after that, you will be listening to the voice of Lois Eshimi as she brings you the Onkona Nadenge program. Do stay tuned for that and also the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 16:30. Business Economic segment comes your way at 1800 hours. From Indafa, happy Juju. It is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow. Same time, same place, same radio frequency, same website and same app. Goodbye.